Hey everyone, I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and in front of me I got Broadsides, the Shield Drone, Fire Warriors, and the new Space Hulk board game, a Games Workshop. It's a whole grab bag of Warhammer 40,000 goodies on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield! Welcome back to Season 3 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. I put together a few small segments here about Warhammer 40,000, and we're kind of clumping them all together in one show. So first up, we'll take a first look at the new Space Hulk board game at Games Workshop. It was released just a couple days ago, and I went up to my local GW store, got my copy, and got it all assembled. First, we're going to take a look at what's inside. I'll give you a hint, there's lots of cool things in here. Then we're going to go and head over and talk some tactics about the Tau Empire Fire Warriors, how to use these guys effectively in combat, and how I've used them in the past. Then we'll do a quick instruction project on how you can build your own custom shield drone for the Tau Empire. And finally, we'll finish up with talking tactics for the Tau Empire broadside battle suits. So with that, let's get the show started, and I'll check back in at the end. This edition of Space Hulk was released to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the game. And this particular edition's only being produced a single production run. I don't know exactly what that means in terms of numbers of units, but if you want it, get out there and get it soon. In terms of volume-wise and size of box anyway, it's got to be bigger than both the Battle of Skull Pass and Black Reach. And best of all, inside, it is packed to the rim with lots of goodies. The one note before I dive into this, if you did what I did where you went online and pre-ordered it through Games Workshop website and had it sent to a local GW store, local GW store has no idea they have your copy. It's a bit of a screw up on their part. So what you're going to do is get out there, get your copy early, and be sure to take your receipt from the website into the store so they can give you your copy. But anyway, back to the actual contents. Inside, you're going to find 35 main game figures and a few of the support ones for objectives and artifacts and things like that. It breaks down where you're going to have 12 Space Marine Terminators, including one librarian and one sergeant. You've got 22 Gene Stealers in various poses. I think there's actually 11 different poses, so two of each. And then you've also got a single plastic Brood Lord. This is, I believe, the first time that Brood Lord models ever come out in plastic. In terms of quality, these things are fantastic. And not only sculpting quality, they're easily comparable to any of the other 40K figures, but also in theme and style of design. The Gene Stealers are standing on like piles of skulls, climbing down bulkheads, busting out of the ground. Where the Space Marine Terminators are really cool because they're like in various battle positions. And even one of them is actually carrying the dismembered head and backbone of a Gene Stealer. So that's giving a really cool effect to the game. I'm very impressed with the figures. And if you are just a 40K player in terms of what cost-wise, you're probably getting over $200 worth of figures in this box. Because do the math, 12 Terminators is like, what, a little over two boxes of Terminators. 22 Gene Stealers is almost three boxes of Gene Stealers. And the Brood Lord, the metal one, was $17 by himself. I'm sure he's more expensive now. And of course, you've got your rule book and you've got your mission book. The rule book clocks in at 23 pages and is full color, really easy to read, and got lots of pictures to explain all the different concepts of the rules. And this is not a direct translation of 40K. It is actually a different game. It is the original Space Hulk game for the most part, with a few extra things added in, a few things streamlined. So it's going to play different than 40K, and it's got a different set of rules, which are frankly a lot simpler than the normal 40K rules. Then you've got a 47 or 48 page mission book. It's got 12 missions in it you can play, plus other background information about the rules and the characters and the world of Warhammer 40,000 and what Space Hulk's all about. Of course, you've got your support elements here. You've got 5 6-sided dice, and they're actually really cool looking dice. They're kind of striped and camouflaged a little bit, a little bone color with a little bit of brownish camouflage. Pretty cool. You've got a timer, because one of the neat things about this game is that humans have only so much time to act in their turn, when the Gene Stealer player can do is take as long as he wants. So you got a timer for that thing to keep track of the turn time. And one nice little surprise they give you here is you got 4 empty plastic bags. It seems simple little thing to do, but when you get lots of cardboard counters and pieces going in these games, it's often a mess to keep them straight. Some companies could really learn from this, i.e. Fantasy Flight Games. They're notorious. At least StarCraft, the board game anyway, had lots of little pieces and nowhere to put them. So that's a really nice little bonus thing that GW did. Small, but it's a nice little touch. Then we get to the bulk of the contents of the box. 12 really huge, very thick counters. These things are, look really nice, really heavy duty. Fantastic artwork on them. So the board basically interlocks like a puzzle. Every piece is kind of can snap together, little puzzle-like connections. The theme to the art is fantastic. There's little control consoles. This area here is just covered in blood. You've got fuel spillage in other areas. You've got warning lights in the hallways. One room has actually basically already been taken over by the Tyranids. It's got Tyranid spires growing out of it. Then, of course, you've got your game counters. Same exact material. One's already falling out. Same exact material that the game tiles are made of. Excellent quality. Nice little artworks. So, like I said, there's 12 sheets of these things. That covers, obviously, the rooms, the counters, the doors, all those kind of things. So you get quite a bit of counters in this box. In terms of how many rooms and such you get, I haven't sat down to count that out yet, but you do get a lot of stuff in this box. As for whether the value of is it worth $100, straight up, it's kind of on the fence. We'll have to see how the gameplay does, but if you are a 40K fan, you're already given a ton of discounts in terms of buying these models. So, you know, like I said, you get over $200 worth of models in a $100 box. So in 40K scale, it's really great value. Of course, whether just in general compared to other games, it's going to really depend on how the game plays. So, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can try to track some people down and play this game shortly once I get everything assembled. So that wraps up this first look at Space Hulk by Games Workshop. The Fire Warrior is the basic infantry soldier for the Tau Empire. It's a highly effective anti-infantry weapon, but like most Tau, it's very poor in close combat. Let's talk Fire Warrior tactics. For me, the Magic Fire Warrior squad size is 10. In reality, this number is kind of arbitrary, but I find it's a good balance between firepower and cost. Plus, this way, by having 10-man squads, if you find that your total list comes in a little short in points, you can always stick an extra soldier here and there to bring the point value up to the maximum. As for weapons, all but one of my squads will carry pulse rifles. I generally don't move my infantry too much, so the extra mobility slash firepower trade-off that a pulse carbine gives you is generally not worth it for me. What also is a must is a Shashui with Markolite and Bonding Knife. Of course, the Markolite's always useful because of all the cool things it does, and the Bonding Knife helps extend the functional lifetime of a squad. On the deployment front, give your Fire Warriors as big a field of fire as possible. Also, since they won't be moving too much, it's not a bad idea to stick them in cover if that option is available. Another cool thing you can do is if you don't have the first turn, use your Fire Warriors as screens for some of your more expensive, more powerful units. Now, Fire Warriors with pulse rifles really won't move much. I generally find if they move, they lose a turn of shooting. So therefore, the only time I do have them move is if they're about to be charged. In that case, I'll usually get them up in rapid fire range and try to do as much damage to the enemy as possible. Fire Warriors with pulse carbines are the direct opposite. You want to keep them constantly moving because they're assault weapons. What you want to try to do is to try to bait the enemy to get them to break off some of their troops and go after the pulse carbine troops, therefore reducing the number of models that eventually reach your primary gun line. Fire Warriors should attack every turn. Keep scanning the battlefield for enemy infantry and light vehicles and open fire. For maximum survivability, always eliminate an enemy squad entirely before acquiring a new target. Two squads of three figures is far more dangerous to a Tau Empire gun line than one squad of six figures. In the event Fire Warriors do find themselves in close combat, do everything in your power to keep that combat from lasting more than one round. So that was a quick overview of the Tau Empire Fire Warrior. So hopefully that makes you more effective when it comes to fighting for the greater good. It's time to begin building the shield drone for the Tau Empire. So the pieces we have here are the saucer from a Tau Empire gun drone. We've got the flight base, the little clear plastic base, and the clear plastic stick that it'll rest on. We have two gun drone antennas, or antennae, I guess would be the proper word to say there. A matching pair of gun drone pulse carbines. And then, of course, the little piece from a Tau Empire gun drone, which attaches the saucer to the guns. So we basically got a pretty much, oh, and then also, sorry, last item then we have is a Tau Empire Crisis Suit Shield Generator. So basically we got a gun drone kit with an extra antenna and a Crisis Suit Shield Generator. We're going to start by taking the two pulse carbines and then flip them over so the side that has a little socket is on the top. And using a nice sturdy box cutter, what you're going to want to do is cut off the back of the gun maybe an eighth of an inch above the little post hole. So let me just make it a line in right here. Hold it up the camera. So you can see I've now got a little line. Focus. There we go. You can see a little line I just cut in right above the post hole. Just go ahead, using a very sturdy box cutter, like I got a nice big utility knife here, and just gently go back and forth, and eventually that'll be scored enough where you can kind of bend it and break it off. And now we're going to do something very similar for the bottom, except this time we're going to cut it off probably about a quarter of an inch below the post hole. As you'll see in the gun drone pulse carbine, there's kind of like a little handle area that's empty. You want to cut it off on the far end of that handle. So let me put a nice little scoring line there and we'll show it to you. You can see here where I was talking about how here's the empty spot for the handle, and the very bottom of the handle is where I put the little scoring line. If you look very carefully, you can see it right across that point, right where I'm holding the scissors up. Same idea, take your nice heavy-duty utility knife, go back and forth, and cut off the bottom piece of the pulse carbine. And then you'll want to go ahead and then do the exact same thing for the other pulse carbine. So once you've got both cuts done, you're going to have two little pieces of the pulse carbine, both which will include the post hole and maybe about a quarter to an eighth of an inch extended on either side of the post hole. Let's go back to the gun drone saucer. Flip it over, and you're going to take the little T-joint that normally attaches the pulse carbines to the saucer and just kind of glue it in as normal. And you want to line it such a way that it's going to be perpendicular to the two antenna when they get glued on. So like I said, just glue the T-joint in as normal and make it perpendicular to the direction of the two antenna. There we go. So it's looking like a pretty standard gun drone at this point. Here's where things are going to get a little bit different from your typical gun drone construction. So you've got the saucer with the T-joint, and now you're going to take the two pieces of the pulse carbines that you cut out, and you're going to attach them to the T-joint. But what you're going to do is point them down instead of out in front of the drone. So make sure the two pieces fit in facing down all right. You may need to cut off a little piece of plastic here. Really can't point out too well. That's probably going to interfere with where you need to be. So there's a little piece of plastic there. It's going to interfere with the placement of the pulse carbine piece. So you got to cut that little bit off. This next part you have to be very careful with. Otherwise, you might find yourself in the hospital in a hurry. What you're going to do is drill a small hole in the front of the crisis suit shield generator so you can insert the clear plastic flight stand into the shield generator, because the shield generator is going to be the bottom of the shield drone. Now, the ideal circumstance is to use a drill press, or a little bit less ideal circumstance would be to lock this thing in a vise and then use a hand drill. I have neither one of those options available to me, so I'm going to do the very dangerous way, which I don't recommend doing. You can be very careful using a box cutter knife, just very gently at first. Stick the knife into the front of the shield generator like this and just slowly kind of score out and drill out a little bit of a hole. It'll take a while. Like I said, you got to be very careful. Otherwise, your knife may slide off and jab you in your finger. Just keep doing this until you've got a big enough hole where you can stick the flight stand in. So with the hole in the bottom of the shield generator, it's time to move on. Let's bring the other piece of the shield drone back, where it was, you know, obviously the T-joint, the saucer, and the two pulse carbine pieces. And now using some glue, you just want to fix the crisis suit shield generator to the bottom of the gun drone. Now that we've got the shield generator on the bottom, let's go ahead and attach the antenna on the top. This is just like a normal gun drone, except you got two antennae instead of a single one, because for some reason shield drones have two. It's just how they're done. So with antennae glued on, you've got your completed shield drone. There's one thing to keep in mind. Because of the fact you've got an inaccurately drilled hole here down the bottom, you're probably going to have to glue the flight stand on. I know that's not ideal. They already have flight stands already have problems as it is, and they sometimes will break if you do this, but it's what you kind of have to do in this circumstance. So you'll survive and get by. Now, at this point, you can kind of be a little creative. Obviously, paint the drone on, but it's like you normally would, and one thing I've been trying to do, haven't gotten quite down the way I want to look yet, but is to give the shield drone a bit of an effect of what I'd say, kind of make it look like there is like an actual energy shield around it protecting it. So one idea, let me move them up here and hold them up close. This is the same model that I just showed off a minute ago. I've actually got it primed and painted. And what I did is I took little pieces of solid, I think it's 20 gauge copper wire, kind of strip the actual rubber stripping or rubber insulation off them, kind of bent them around a little bit, and then glued them actually into the shield drone itself. And then I took a corner of a plastic bag and pulled it as tight as I could across the shield drone, then kind of dry brushed a little bit of blue for like a shield color around where the little pieces of wire meet the shield. And the idea obviously being the pieces of wire are like energy sparks leaping off the shield drone as it's taking hits. And obviously the blue then was like parts of the shield kind of showing up as they take hits. Like I said, it didn't give it quite the effect I want to, but we're kind of on the way there. Just give you some ideas to play with. But with that, you can call your shield drone done. And let's head back over and talk some more tactics. Well, the Tau Empire does have access to several different types of battle suits. Above and beyond, my most favorite is the XV-88 broadside, simply because it looks the best. Also, its single-purpose anti-tank design makes it really simple to use, so let's talk tactics. Now, there's a decent amount of flexibility when it comes to building squads of broadside battle suits. In smaller battles or special scenarios where there's no concern over the limit of heavy support choices, I'll often put them by themselves with two drones to increase survivability. However, in larger standard battles, I'm going to go ahead and group them together in groups of two or three for two reasons. One, this will allow me to get the same amount of firepower and still give me room for other heavy support choices like a hammerhead or something. And also, larger groups of broadsides are going to make more efficient use of Marco Light tokens. So as for equipment, I never take the plasma rifle option. I always take the advanced stabilization system over the multi-tracker though. I find the limited movement provided by it is much more useful than the rare occasion that I actually want to fire both the broadside weapons at the same target in one turn. Also, be sure to take two drones to get some extra life and a Bonnie knife to keep the squad together. If you get the first turn, the deployment is really simple. Go ahead, put them down and point them at a tank. If you can get them in cover without hindering their line of sight, even better. If you don't have first turn, then go ahead and get these guys in cover or protection somehow. Either put another squad in front of them to give them a cover save, or even better, keep them out of line of sight of the enemy altogether. Hostile forces will want to destroy the broadsides as soon as possible, and they'll direct a lot of firepower at them. Either option you choose, make sure they're not too far from clear line of fire to the enemy. Broadsides don't really walk, they waddle. Since both their weapons are heavy weapons, it's important to make maximum use of the advanced stabilization system. Just slowly move these guys around and keep getting them in lines of sight to enemy units. Also, be careful not to leave them too close to the right or left board edges, as this will make them very vulnerable to outflanking troops. And if you end up moving your broadsides early on in the turn, make sure you don't accidentally place other forces in their line of fire. For broadsides, combat goes something like this. Point railgun at tank, watch tank explode. In the event no tanks are available, keep an eye out for the heavier troops, like Terminators or Demons or Carnifaxes. Also, in the event that a hero strays off by himself, a nice well-placed railgun shot can often turn them into squishy piles of goo. And as a worst-case scenario, your smart missile systems, they can always wreak havoc on light infantry. Well, that's a basic look at the broadside battle armor tactics. Hopefully that helps you perform better when it comes to fighting for the greater good. Well, that's all I got for you. Once again, I'm Jason. For questions or comments about the show, send them to me over at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @TT_Battlefield, or if you want to play some Dawn of War 2 with me or Left 4 Dead, track me down in Steam as username Rocco Robotics, same as it is on the Army Showcase. So with that, thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
The Tabletop Battlefield is copyright 2007-2009 by Jason Rutherford and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.pathfighter.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.